Brett Hayes, Associate Professor of Political Science at Union College, our in-house guy when it comes to things academic. I wanted to ask you a question, Brad. Something interesting just happened before the Supreme Court, and a lot of people are watching John Roberts' role in all of it. Maybe you could tell us about that.
Sure. The Supreme Court just the other day declined to intervene on behalf of in the documents that were made public, an unknown corporation that is owned by an unknown foreign country. And that company is fighting a subpoena from the independent counsel's office from Robert Mueller. The outcome essentially was that the foreign company wasn't given any type of protection by the United States Supreme Court. And so here you have, for the first time, the United States Supreme Court weighing in on whether, in fact, to side with the special counsel or with this foreign company. So the vote there obviously came on the side of the special counsel's office. And it tells us at least that there is some institutional support for what Mueller is doing, that there are that this is more than simply a witch hunt, to use the president's term, that there are real reasons why the investigation is leading to, you know, these foreign countries and the ways in which they have engaged in some ways with, our electoral politics, our campaigns, etc. So I think that, you know, in many ways, if we often think about the Supreme Court as being under the control of conservatives, and sometimes that gets simplified or reduced down to that, well, it's a bunch of Republicans in control now, and that therefore they're going to do all that they can to protect, you know, other Republicans, including Trump. And that was not the case here, right? That I think it's actually much more complicated than that, that judges are, serious legal actors that take these standards of proof very seriously. And the special counsel's office was obviously able to do enough to convince the court that there was a sufficient cause to issue this subpoena.
Now, Brett Hayes, there are those people who think that sooner or later, what's going to happen here is the court is going to have to decide on something really relevant to the Mueller investigation. Maybe he gets fired, maybe something happens, and then you got the Clarence Thomas type sitting there, and Alito's and some of these other people who are going to be backing Trump. So this was an important little hint as to the fact that the law might count for something.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think that some of those concerns are a bit overblown. Although, that being said, there are any number of serious legal thinkers, I think often that tend to be a little bit more conservative, that have been concerned, deeply concerned about these special investigations, about taking the control of the kind of prosecutorial power out of a direct line of executive control. Justice Scalia had a famous dissent on the independent counsel statute and its constitutionality before it was allowed to expire. And he very much kind of anticipates much of what happens under the Starr investigation of Clinton and his administration. So those concerns have in some ways been transferred to issues of a special counsel, even though the special counsel is much more in line with executive control. But nevertheless, I think that there's a difference, though, between some of the kind of academic concerns about whether we should have these kinds of special counsel investigations and whether, in fact, this particular special counsel is exercising power that he rightly possesses, meeting the standards that are necessary for the issuance of a subpoena and the like. So, and I think we see that confirmation time and again. Obviously, we just talked about it with regard to the Supreme Court. But importantly, the grand jury that has been working with the Mueller investigation was set to expire. Grand juries basically expire after 18 months, and you have to go back to the courts and justify a continuation. A federal judge just extended the grand jury based on a showing that the grand jury is in the public's interest. And so, again, that shows that the courts are, again, affirming that the investigation is doing what it needs to do, and that is very much in the public concern.
Now, John Roberts recently gave an utterance that was pretty important in Watch. He said, you know, there are no Democratic judges and Republican judges. We're just judges. Now, I think that in my technical terms, that's a lot of bushu, because there are Republican judges, we know it, and we know the Democratic judges. And what do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think he's trying to make an argument that is contrary to Trump's attacks on the on the judiciary generally, but certainly on the federal judiciary, and so, you know, it's a bit of a Jeffersonian moment. We are all Democrats. We are all Republicans.
Sure.
And I think that there is something that's important about that. If in fact the idea of rule of law, about a neutral judiciary, is to have any purchase in American political practice. That being said, right, you can easily kind of juxtapose that moment with the federal judge declaring that the totality of the Affordable Care Act is unconstitutional.
Now, there's a Republican judge.
Right. A Republican judge that bought a legal argument that the right has largely rejected, right? If you look at conservative legal thinkers, they have largely said that that is an absurd argument, that there's just no way to justify that particular outcome. And so, you know, most experts seem to suggest that when that is heard on appeal, that decision will be overturned. And there's an issue of severability there and the like, but that most of the act should in fact stand. So, but if in fact it's true that that was a very thin legal argument, it suggests some kind of motivation outside of what, you know, kind of is what conventionally, quote unquote, legal. So we know that there are, you know, certain motivations, that there are going to be sympathies on the courts. But I think going back to Roberts's point, I think he was saying that there are times when it may be appropriate to criticize courts, but it's not always about Democrats and Republicans, and that we need to have greater respect for the judiciary and its mission.
I think part of that was that Trump had attacked the judiciary, and therefore he was sort of on the side of some people who might consider themselves on the more liberal side. I wanted to ask you about this John Roberts thing. We only have a minute. But he's a guy who obviously is taking his role as Chief Justice in the Roberts Court being very important to him.
I think that's right. You know, it's hard to see that show up in terms of votes all the time. But certainly, you know, the Chief Justice position, it has primary responsibility as the steward for the federal judiciary as an institution, right? So responsibility for funding, advocacy for greater funding, greater resources, and even greater respect. And I think that Roberts has been more than willing to play that role and seek to protect and bolster the authority and the means of the federal judiciary.
Well, will he have the ability to herd the cats? In other words, the new Trump Supreme Court appointees, they may get another one in the case of Judge Ginsburg. Will Roberts have the authority, the heft, to be able to say, hey, we can't be just a bunch of, you know, hacks?
Well, I think if you're asking me an ideological question about whether he's going to be able to wrangle ideologically disparate judges, or in this case, justices.
You can call it ideology. You can call it, you know, anything
yeah.
you want to call it.
My answer is probably no. I mean, there's just not a lot that a justice on the Supreme Court can do outside of convincing colleagues.
Well, that's right. Earl Warren did it.
Well, he did it some, although he had a much more ideologically...
Yes, that's true.
Right. Contiguous court. I think, you know, there are some really interesting things going on about the ways in which certain justices are positioning themselves in order to appeal to the other side. There's a really interesting case with the partisan gerrymandering in which Elena Kagan is clearly making an appeal in which liberals will support, but doing it in a way that is basically employing conservative reasoning. And so all of that is to say that I think there's still there has to be an emphasis on the ways in which these justices reach their decision as a way of convincing colleagues to vote in ways that are consistent.
It's great to have our friend and our colleague Brad Hayes in the Congressional Corner, associate professor of political science at Union College. And thanks for being here, Brad.
Thanks, Alan.